they want to get you, they'll get you. The NSA specifically targets the communications of everyone. They're collecting your communications.
Hello, everybody. You know, sometimes there are news cycles where you just look to the heavens and say, thank the Lord we have a show called Thought Crime. This is one of those news cycles. Mr. Blake is here. We're going to unveil Blake's new title later on in the program.
Oh, boy, it's very exciting.
Big announcement. We're just going to leave you in suspense. We have Andrew Colvette and the man accused of being a foreign spy, Jack Posobiec. Jack, what is going on in Yemen? And tease it for our later segment, because we will get to it. But let's get to the breaking news for those people that's tuning in.
All right, so breaking news for those people that have been watching the Red Sea, the U.S. Navy lately over there for the past couple of weeks, really, I think about almost a month at this point now, the Houthi rebels have been firing off missiles, rockets, and drones targeting merchant shipping in the Red Sea. This, of course, is one of the key choke points for oil transfers between the Gulf of the Persian Gulf and up through the Suez Canal. The U.S. Navy has been authorized and been shooting down these drones, but hasn't struck the Yemeni Houthis at any point until just about an hour ago here, opened up a series of very serious strikes. We're told naval strikes, potentially air force strikes against Houthi targets. We don't even have all the targets yet that have been hit, I'm told. And this is just, again, you know, fog of war, so I'll put that on it. But we're told Abbas Airport, Taiz Airport, this is in Sana'a, which is the capital of Yemen, controlled by the Houthis, 22nd Brigade Base in Taiz, Kalin Base, a number of bases, number of airports, a number of positions which are used to conduct these strikes. We're told that that the Houthis have responded by announcing they will begin the direct targeting of U.S. naval vessels and British Royal Navy vessels in the Red Sea, which they had not done up to now.
So we'll talk about the significance of this as it ties into a story about military recruitment. So we'll put that kind of on hold. But the story that has had the thought crimey aspects all week, it has to be, right? It just is almost irresistible to get into, is the bizarre, strange, perplexing story of Jewish tunnels.
Now, the tunnels.
Before we go any further, I need to say two things. And then, Blake, I'll allow you to navigate our audience like a good ombudsman through this story. Is I had no idea why this was a big story. Andrew and I were together. We're like, why are people messaging us about Jewish tunnels? It wasn't that interesting to me at all. And then I actually started the research and I'm like, okay, this is kind of interesting. The second thing is that this is being used to foment and spread Jew hatred. We have no tolerance for that nonsense. We have no patience for that. However, this story needs to be covered. Blake, what in the fresh heaven is going on with Jewish tunnels?
It's definitely one of the funniest stories ever, just kind of from a superficial visual element. It trickled out, I think it was on Tuesday night, maybe Tuesday night, whichever it was the first night. You start getting these videos popping up on Twitter that are like, you know, these cops are in this synagogue and then this wall busts down and you have clips of, they were just showing it there where this guy's crawling out like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, except, you know, with the skull cap on.
This was so confusing.
And
I wasn't interested at all. I was like, so you know what I thought the story was? I thought people were mocking Jews because they're so obsessed with Hamas tunnels and they built their own tunnels. And it was like a way to own the Jews. I was like, that's stupid anti-Semitism. I have no patience for this. But it actually is a little bit weirder than that.
It's so much weirder than that. So, you know, it's context. This is New York. This is ultra-Orthodox Jews, you know, the ones who still practice.
Hasidic.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's specifically Hasidic. It's the Chabad Lubavitch movement.
These are Hasidic, I believe.
Yeah, I don't want to mix it up, you know, my terminology, but that's, you know, what this movement is. So these are the guys. They wear the hats. They wear the old-timey hair. They observe all the rules pretty strictly. And so it's this historic synagogue in Brooklyn. And it seems there was some sort of dispute where some people wanted to expand the synagogue. And it might be related with, this is in the Lubavitch movement, there's
a messianic figure from the 80s.
Yeah, they're debating whether he's the Messiah or not. And an element of this is like, well, we're going to spread the message that this is the Messiah, and then it will cause the movement to grow. So we need to expand the synagogue. You know, very old-timey thinking, like, you know, we're going to be a bigger movement, so we need a bigger synagogue. And how do you do that? You dig tunnels. This is one of the claims I've heard. I don't know 100% how accurate it is. But so these you know, you have all these young students. They're these, you know, young men who just study Talmud all the time.
And Torah.
And Torah. Yes. Torah and Talmud.
And the Tanakh.
And they, you know, they're very enthusiastic. So how do you show your enthusiasm for this? Well, you go and you dig the tunnel yourself, or you hire Mexican illegal immigrants to do it, as it turns out. Or I should just say illegal workers. We don't know if they were Mexican. But, and so they go and they just start digging this tunnel underneath this Chabad building, and it sort of
Chabad,
links.
Yes.
Whatever. And you link these three buildings, it seems.
Which is a men's quarter, a woman's quarter.
It was a men's quarter, a women's quarter, and it goes under the women's quarter. That's a little weird. I think that might just be a coincidence, but it does give it some strange flair. And then there's all these weird aspects to it. You know, in the clip that you can see of them, like, opening the sides of the window, they were pulling out this kind of soiled mattress. And it seems that what happened is the illegal workers who were digging this lived there for a while because it was all, you know, an illegal operation. But that caused all these lunatics on the internet to lose their minds. So sort of an awkward context of this is there's all these, you know, a downside of, you know, all the free speech on Twitter is you do have a lot of loonies on there. And so you have a lot of really bad anti-Semitism on Twitter. That's just how it is. And some people are really leaning into this and they're just like, yeah, these tunnels were for pedophiles or whatever to hide their victims. Just bizarre stuff. That's bad. But the clips are really funny, I will say.
Okay, but just to make sure we exhaust every possible internet conspiracy, there also was a child's high chair found. Is that correct?
There was an image that looks like that. I don't know the explanation of that one. It's probably not.
The other thing is that the mattress was soiled with menstrual blood, allegedly.
I don't know how you'd know that.
Well,
but
well
maybe.
The explanation, because in Jewish law, the woman... in traditional, let's just say custom, in ultra Orthodox, the woman and the man on a wedding night will go and obviously consummate the marriage, and they'll come out and celebrate with a cloth demonstrating she was indeed a virgin, because she then, quote unquote, let's just say bled afterwards.
So Charlie, this is it's called the mikvah, where women go during or after their period. Hence the blood on the mattress. Okay, so and then there's all this child sacrifice crazy stuff like on the internet about you'll hear about it. But according to one of our Jewish friends that was giving us the lowdown, the buried lead is how this story has fueled all kinds of, you know, anti-Semitic rumors, because Jews are involved, tunnels are involved, blood was found, a child seat was found, or the high chair. But I will tell you, Charlie, you and I both, we kind of didn't get it. There was people on Twitter going like, Charlie, why aren't you commenting on the Jew tunnels? And it was like, it just seems.
What do you want us to say?
I literally was like, what do you want me to say?
Yeah. here's the interesting part though. So when I started, you know, asking some of my Jewish friends, I said, you know, what's the deal with these Jew tunnels? Is this like a normal thing? Is this like you getting back at Hamas? Like, what's the deal? And all three of them gave me the same line. And this is what piqued my interest. I kid you not. This is what instantly got me curious. They said, quote unquote, three different people had no idea I was texting them. I said, what's the deal with these tunnels? And they said, just a bunch of young hooligans. It was like all three of them said the exact same thing to me. And I was the word is out.
But yeah. I don't like that answer, because obviously there was some supervision by leadership. And by the way, if you want to just the story, and I want to get Jack in on this. Jack is suffering of a casualty of being remote on this. But and Jack, by the way, we're getting Jack hopefully to come in person for our Iowa caucus coverage on Monday. So we're working on that. So there's all these New York Post stories, and one of them had this poor kid who keeps on tweeting out in all caps. Have you seen this back like 8 months ago?
Yeah.
He said, there are a bunch of people underneath my apartment speaking Yiddish, and my building has no basement. Repeat, my building has no basement. And people are like, oh, shut up. You're like hearing things. He's like, there are people below my apartment speaking Yiddish, and my basement. It's like one of the funniest.
It's super. I think he might still be nuts, because if you look at the map, the tunnel is between three Chabad buildings. So he might still be nuts, but he's now vindicated.
But no,
in
are
his
they
insanity.
Also building tunnels under his apartment is what people are asking.
It's like it is just.
Is this the only tunnel network?
That's how they were discovered. Because
keep in mind,
there
have been urban legends for decades about, you know, mole people tunnels in New York and like, you know, hidden.
But just to be, by the way, this is not, this is Haaretz.org.
Those are urban legends. Those are real.
and we'll let Jack. Haaretz came out today with a very bizarre article. I was like, guys, this doesn't help. And they say the long history of Jewish people building tunnels. The guys just—they're talking about it. Like,
it's true. I was in a Jewish tunnel in Jerusalem.
There's one underneath the Western Wall, but I said, guys, time out. Just take a loss on this.
Orthodox
one.
Jews do sometimes. Some of them do kind of look like hobbits. So you know, just like tunnels into the.
I don't know. I mean, so look, the point is, Jack. What's going on here? It's a very strange story. I had no interest until. I was told to have interest, and then I kind of gained a little bit of interest, and then the explanation was like, come on, you're trying to tell me that nobody in the leadership knew this. They got a bunch of illegals, Mexicans going down, and they're housing them, and they're like excavating dirt like it's Shawshank Redemption, and it's a bunch of hooligans. Like, come on, don't lie to us. Jack, what's going on
What
here?
Would the poster be instead of Rita Hayworth?
They're not telling us the truth about the tunnels, Charlie. They're clearly hiding what's going on in those tunnels. This thing, here's the biggest piece of this, all right? Here's the biggest piece that I don't buy. Because they say, look, there's just a couple of kids and they didn't do it. Then they say, oh, by the way, they hired a bunch of illegal Mexicans and they were working to build the tunnel and they were living in the tunnel and living in this house. And that's what they try to blame these mattresses on. Plus, you got people that are running around saying, oh, all mattresses look like that. My mattress doesn't look like that. I've never had a mattress that looked like that. Even when I lived by myself, I'd have a mattress that ever looked like that. That's ridiculous. And they said, well, and then when they push back on, they say, well, it wasn't our fault. It was the Mexicans. So of course they blame it on the Mexicans. They said it was there. It was like, you know, Dirty Sanchez over there who was saying that it was his.
No,
you know,
but
his
I actually
mattress.
Believe this because the IDF's PR is just this bad.
It's true. It is that bad, actually. Like, they used to have the best PR in the world. And I'm like, Israel, I don't know what's going on, but you guys like got to hire the guys from before. Then they say there was another piece of it that they said, oh, this has been going on since COVID. And they were trying to tie it to COVID and the lockdowns. We remember because the Orthodox Jewish community in New York was fighting Cuomo at the time and the vaccinations and saying like, oh, it was like an anti-vax tunnel, like the underground anti-vax railroad or something was going on in the Hasidic Jewish community. And it's like, well, wait a minute. None of this adds up because if the Mexicans were just building it, then how could it have been going on since 2020? You guys have been going there for this long under like the world headquarters and nobody knew about it for all this time. Plus that guy's, the tweets that Blake mentioned, these were months ago. So no, I think this was known about. I think it's just blown over into now because it got bigger, but I do think this is something they most likely knew about.
So and I just look, I I'm not overly interested in it, but it also if it wasn't well known about, why did they defend it so viciously against the police?
That's what I'm saying.
Right? That's also it was as if a mob formed, like you don't go to this, as if the police were going to go find like a 2,000-year-old copy of the Torah. And it's like, no, like you can't do that. And they're starting to like move barricades. And I watched the video. I said, geez, they're like defending
it like they've got the Ark of the Covenant in there.
No, like that's what I'm saying. As if it was, you know, the rod of which Moses split the Red Sea with. I mean, I don't quite get that part. And then the PR has just been laughable. Like it's just been one iteration after the other. And I've been reading this and I don't like any of the over-the-top, the anti-Semitism, all that stupid. At the same time, Blake, this is, it's not nothing, is it? If nothing else, it's a strange story.
It's super strange. I think it's funny. I think, like, what it really is, I think it gets at what messes with people's heads a little bit, is you kind of have two types of Jewish people in American life. You have sort of assimilated Jews, and they're mostly like very successful, very well off, very influential. They're smart people. We all know a bunch of them. And then you sort of have this other group that's very old traditional, adheres very much to their old way of life, and has all of these, you know, strange habits that are, you know, straight out of the Middle Ages, essentially. And it makes them very alien to us. And I think, especially if you're, you know, you have all these, unfortunately, you have all these like, you know, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories and stuff. And it's like, the split between these two groups just drives people insane. They can't handle it. It's like, imagine if, you know, we had the Amish and they were just, you know, normal Amish people. And then you had this split that was also Amish and they were really successful and, you know, were major Democratic Party donors and, you know, had all these like famous, you know, business tycoons who are still Amish.
You mean like the Amish own Disney or something?
Yeah, something like that. And it's just, the truth is like, you know, some kind of people, they just run into this and it like breaks their brains. They can't handle it. They lose their minds over it.
So just to be clear, as recent as yesterday, I texted Blake. I said, Blake, you're going to have to catch me at the speed. What is the most sinister conspiracy theory? Like literally, I knew, like, right, Blake? I was like, Andrew was on the chat. I don't follow this stuff. I don't even know where it comes from. And I guess it's ignited all this and people are going crazy and wild and they're screaming at each other and they're calling each other names and the whole things. But Jack, let's just, I have to say that the PR aspect of this is one of the parts that stands out, right? It just, and
look,
just
remember,
to be, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, do you remember this is the second time this year since that we've had the Jews in tunnels thing, right? Because the first was obviously Hamas. And you remember the PR of that where they had the IDF soldier and he took you down there. And then there was the other one, the PR guy that responded to you at one point on Twitter. And they went down and they were digging on their side and the Jews were digging on the other side. Apparently they almost made it. Never the twain shall they meet. But you've got a situation now where it's like, why don't you have one guy who just kind of goes down there and says, look, guys, here's what was going on. I'll walk you through. I'll bring the... You just did this in a war zone. So if you just did this in a war zone, why can't you just do this in New York City and take a camera through and show us what was going on, tell the truth, let people in there, see what's going on, and put it to rest? You could put all of this to rest with just a little bit of transparency. Then you have one guy come up and say, look, I know the internet is... And you could do, which, by the way, when South Park put out the Book of Mormon, all right, the South Park guys, when they did the Book of Mormon musical, I remember this was, and Tyler's not on tonight, of course, but the Church of Mormon kind of responded and then said, yeah, we understand there's this big musical about the Book of Mormon, but hey, you know what? If you like the musical, you'll love the book. And so they used it as kind of like a funny recruitment, you know, sort of method. You could totally do that. You'd say, hey, here's people that are interested in our tunnels. You like our tunnels? Come see what else we're about. Come on in. You could do that if you wanted to be transparent. It's as simple as that. So what it seems like, I'm just saying, it seems like they are trying to hide something, and I'm not going to sit here and speculate why, but I'm telling you that from a PR perspective, they're being very, very cagey about this. They're being very, very cagey. And I will just say that we know for a fact that there are in other cities like Las Vegas and others, there are civilizations of mole people who live underground that conduct tribal warfare against each other. They find you have drug gangs down there. You have druggies down there. They find the bodies. There are places all over the country in major cities where these mole people exist. This is 100% real. Go ask any police officer. They'll tell you what I'm talking about. New York, that's where they got the idea for the Ninja Turtles from, was from these like vagrants and homeless people living underground, and they're basically mole people. Ask anybody from New York or any major Chicago, any major city, they know about this. And so I'm telling you, there's something going on in those tunnels.
And does anyone want to mention that they could have collapsed these buildings? I mean, these are old buildings in Brooklyn, and they're going and they're building.
That's exactly my question, Charlie. It's like, if you dig under New York City, it's filled with pipes and sewers and electrical, like, and a lot of it's from like the 1800s, the early 1900s.
Yes.
So I'm sure they would have encountered a bunch of stuff, hence why it's illegal. You're not supposed to do that. There's structural issues. But, you know, the reaction, you mentioned this earlier, I think that's like a really interesting thing. And maybe we've got the clip of like when the police are entering and all of these Jewish members or whatever are it's a very hurried scenario. And to me, that was like a really interesting red flag, just to watch how they all behaved almost in a collective way. I don't think that's a very like run-of-the-mill mainstream American response to when the police come into your building and they all sort of like jumped around together and they're holding each other back. It does feel sort of Mideastern almost, right? Now, I don't know if most of these people probably were born in New York City. I'm assuming maybe some of them came from Israel. I'm not sure. But the other piece of it, I think, Blake, you mentioned the word medieval in our chat one time because we were talking about the Talmud, right? this, all of this stuff plays together. Because if you go down these internet black holes, you'll a lot of it is talking about, you know, the pedophilia, all this stuff that they get into with these anti-Semitic tropes. It's rooted in like the Talmud, right? And the Talmud is a medieval book, essentially.
It's a dialogue.
It's a dialogue.
I was explaining this to Charlie yesterday.
I know the Talmud, yeah. But yes.
Well, back and forth. There's the pages are filled with arguments of rabbis disagreeing with one another. And so it's like, if you don't understand what you're looking at, yeah, there's going to be some incredibly weird stuff there, but
that's
how
you can tell it's, you know, a Jewish religious text. Cause it's a bunch of people arguing.
That's right. So many different opinions
and arguing over the meaning of words. Yeah.
Yeah. It's legal arguments back and forth. And I think that, you know, if you look on the internet, there's a lot of that they'll take something, they'll cherry pick one sort of argument that's made, and it seems very legalistic, kind of, you know, just cold. And then you'll see another rabbi that argues the opposite position. So I don't know. There's a lot to go on. And I think, you know, Blake, you said there's a lot of flair there. There really is. It's one of those stories that just seems to like excite the imagination, but it's weird. It's just weird. I remember my one experience in New York walking on like a Saturday. And I remember it was in Brooklyn, and they asked me to come into their home and turn a light off for them. And I remember finding that just to be such a foreign thing, but they weren't even allowed to like flip a light switch right on Shabbat. So if you're not aware of Jewish culture, there's a lot of things that might strike you as odd. And I think that just tends to inflame all the internets.
Yeah, I'll just close with this. It's obvious that the leadership of Chabad Lubavitch knew that this tunnel existed. Anyone who says any differently, it's just not true, okay? You're not building tunnels that are, like, going to compete with the Shawshank Redemption, and you have, like, 100 people prevent the police come in, and the leadership didn't know, okay? Just the noise, the excavation, they're hiring a bunch of Mexicans. It's like, just don't lie to us, okay? That's number one.
Blood on the mattress.
Right now, the excuse that they gave, I kind of buy this idea that they want to expand their dominion of their, you know, Hasidic whatever. And okay, fine, fair enough. But then don't tell me it's a bunch of young here. Like, they're throwing these Israeli kids under the bus. They're like, we're going to rescind all these visas because we have no idea what they're doing. And but then where did the Mexicans come from? How'd they pay the Mexicans? And they lived on and by the way, it's like, you know, you want to talk about like immigrant rights. Like, where's the ACLU? You got a bunch of Mexicans living in a basement for like 3 months. Like, that's what's going on. Seriously, you got a bunch of laborers.
It should be illegal to hire illegal. Like, why don't we actually go after
people? First of all, we don't know if they're illegals. They're Mexicans. I'm just saying though that we don't know. We don't.
We should actually prosecute people who hire illegals. Just needs to be said over and over.
I agree. The question is, we're supposed to believe that a bunch of young lunatics on student visas from Israel just hired a bunch of Mexican laborers and housed them subterranean for 3 months on end and fed them? Would they feed them, you know, kosher food? I don't think so. Like, I just that something about this, the excuses they're giving aren't adding up. And if this is all just like they're trying to find an excuse to expand their religious dominion, fine, then just own it. But and then they're saying like, oh yeah, it's just, you know, a bunch of kids being. I'm sorry.
Well, another
kids don't build tunnels.
Like, a dimension of this is just
kids go watch weird movies. Like, they don't build tunnels. I'm sorry.
A dimension of this, I think, is that with these very traditional communities, they're kind of not. They're sort of just not a part of regular society and its institutions. So it's very upsetting to a lot of them that, like, the police are getting involved, that, you know, all these public authorities are getting involved. These groups tend to have their own institutions. Like, you know, they have their own courts. Like, you go to your Orthodox Jewish religious court if you're going to get a divorce. You don't, like, get divorced through the normal legal system. And so I think there's a dimension of that where they're just very much eager to kind of keep the authorities out of this. And you see this pop up in, you know, their other communities. And it sometimes causes friction, like in their colonies in upstate New York. You'll have, you know, the friction between their school system and the public school system, their kind of way of life and everyone else's way of life in the area. It, you know, it's a recurring thing that pops up if you bother to pay attention to it, which I don't blame most people for not bothering.
This is very true that they kind of police their own. There is a little bit, I don't want to say a no-go zone, but the police don't necessarily over-monitor because it's low crime. It's, you know, very familiar. And so the fact that the police showed up really bothered them, evidently, which is why they responded the way they did. And so I guess it remains a mystery. I am curious, guys. You can email us, freedom@charliekirk.com, what your theories are regarding this. This seems just to be a religious expansion of a Chabad. And they are ashamed they got caught.
I got to read this one comment. It goes, the guy says, Bushwriter, he says, when I heard the story the first time, I said, those don't look like tunnelers.
The joke
and then the next one is, there's nothing more disgusting in the world than fake Catholics like Poso. Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go, buddy.
I think somebody.
I love it.
Someone should ask the Mexicans. Where are they?
We should, yeah. I want to get them in. I want to go, and we should go up. Maybe I should head up. Maybe I should go. I want to go in the tunnels. I'm going in the tunnels. I am going to conduct a thought crime spelunking expedition of the tunnels. We should just go. We should just go in. Why not?
We may never know the truth. And like Shawshank Redemption, tunnels just go. And they end up in what they call Zihuatanejo in Shawshank Redemption, right? Zihuatanejo, Mexico.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And he hides the thing under the tea or whatever.
Wellness Company, are you truly prepared for the unexpected? In a world filled with uncertainties, your family's health security is paramount. Don't take chances when it comes to your health. Introducing the Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit, the ultimate defense against medical crises. Inside, you'll find 8 critical medications like ivermectin. Blake is a big ivermectin fan. Amoxicillin, Z-Pak, and more, all accompanied by an easy-to-follow guidebook so you're covered at any time. The Wellness Company's chief medical board is made up of none other than Dr. Drew Pinsky, Dr. Peter McCullough, and Dr. James Thorpe, and more truth-telling doctors who are committed to building a parallel healthcare system. In a post-COVID world, many Americans say they would avoid a doctor or hospital unless it was a catastrophic situation. And now the Wellness Company's medical emergency kit provides the gold standard solution for your peace of mind. From tick bites to COVID to extreme bioterror events, every scenario is covered. Do not let uncertainty paralyze you. Visit twc.health/CJ. And use promo code CJ for an exclusive 10% discount. That is twc.health/CJ. Secure your family's health today with the Wellness Company. So speaking of kind of all of that topic when it comes to American Judaism, there is another story that we want
this
to talk about.
This is the other one.
It is a segue.
I think this is a funnier story, actually. So just the other day, a bunch of people in Hollywood signed a letter. Almost 300 people signed this letter. And it's an open letter to the Academy of Motion Pictures and whatever their full name is. The people who run the Oscars vote on the Oscars. And what they're demanding is that in Hollywood that Jews be recognized as an underrepresented group in Hollywood. Quote, while we applaud the Academy's efforts to increase diverse and authentic storytelling, an inclusion effort that excludes Jews is both steeped in and misunderstands anti-Semitism. The absence of Jews from underrepresented groups implies that Jews are overrepresented in films, which is simply untrue. Now, just as a preliminary...
Wait, you're saying it implies that they're overrepresented or underrepresented?
It implies they are overrepresented. That is what the letter says. That since they're not included as underrepresented, the implication is they're overrepresented, and the letter says this is false. Now, just as a preliminary, I went to the Wikipedia page. You guys can bring this up on the screen. And I looked up a list of Jewish Academy Award winners and nominees. And you can see scrolling here, this is just for best actor in a leading role. Do you guys have that on screen? So red is nominated, green is one. We have, Paul Lucas won in 1943. We have Richard Dreyfuss won in 77. Dustin Hoffman has won it twice. Paul Newman, Michael Douglas, Daniel Day-Lewis, Adrian Brody, Sean Penn has won twice. Joaquin Phoenix won for Joker. There's a pretty good number of them.
And Gal Gadot.
Yeah, Gal Gadot,
right?
Israeli.
But that counts.
Yeah, I'd assume that would count. this is actresses. They have a good number of them. And, keep in mind, we've had about not even 100 years of the Oscars. So they're about 2% of the U.S. So if they were fully, just represented, they would have 2 wins in 100 years.
Daniel Day-Lewis Jewish?
According to this list, he is. So three wins.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
Check his early life. Check the early life page.
Director, unsurprisingly, a lot of best directors.
And
What's Spielberg?
Yes.
Is Steven Spielberg Jewish?
He's got to be Irish. Jewish?
I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure he's Irish.
Yeah. You know?
No, Mormon. Big Mormon. Spielberg. Big Mormon.
Well, and as somebody who lived in Los Angeles, I can attest that accusation against Hollywood of being anti-Jew is false. It's false.
Yeah. And what's funny about this, though, is what's really playing into this and what I don't think they're saying out loud is in 2020 with George Floyd and everything, you got this big push. You know, it's a lib area, lib city, huge. You know, the diversity push was everywhere, but it hit Hollywood really big. And what's happened is if you're already a big name in Hollywood, you're fine. You know, the people who can headline a film still headline films. The big directors are still big directors. But what it's really messed up is the intake. You know, who's getting new opportunities as actors? Who's getting a new chance to run a show? And it's all diversity stuff. You know, they're handing it all out based on identity politics stuff. And Jews are not being considered underrepresented. And so they're just getting classed with white people. And you're basically having this total systematic exclusion of white people from Hollywood, as libs want to do. They're anti-white. And so what I think they are seeing is this is their way of kind of expressing the fact that what is very true, which is that Jews are getting caught up in the whole keep white people out of Hollywood thing.
But which they're fine with as long as they're not part of it.
Exactly. And so, you know, the headline we have on the bottom is Jedi, J-E-D-I. And, you know, this is what some people have worried we might get in the wake of, you know, the Harvard backlash, all this other stuff, you know, the anti-DEI push. What we want is we'd love for liberal and moderate Jews to turn against DEI because they realize it's bad. The possibility that people worry about is you'll get this sort of devil's bargain where DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, will become Jedi, as the joke goes, which is just add Jewish people to the DEI hierarchy as an oppressed class. And certainly they have a lot of claim to being oppressed in history, but especially in America and in the last century of America, there is really no group that does more to vindicate America as a land of opportunity, that they came here poor, they were enormously successful, they are enormously successful, and they are in America's elite institutions, whether it's Congress or business, Wall Street, Hollywood, the Academy, all the Ivy Leagues, they're overrepresented, and largely because they deserve to be. And it's just very bizarre to have this turnaround. And you're seeing, they claim in this letter that, you know, it's a mistake to view Jews as white. And
but notice,
sorry, guys.
But notice that the AD, it's from the ADL,
and,
right?
And yes, we have that. Well, I'm not sure what the number is. Jonathan Greenblatt. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I didn't think this was that big. I thought it was just some stupid Hollywood thing. And then I was like, wait, the ADL is sharing this out as if this is like some serious dearth in the United States, some serious disparity that there aren't enough Jewish actors being represented in Hollywood. And when even the picture he's shown are like, you know, very well-known actors and actresses. I'm like, I don't understand.
Do you want to read
this,
the whole thing for us? Just for people who can't read it, Jack?
Here we go.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's critical for any push for diversity in any industry to be inclusive of Jews. If your project of inclusion perpetuates the exclusion of Jews, you are failing. So we applaud the many celebrities for their courage in standing up, speaking out, and writing to the Academy to demand change. That's from Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL, total fraud, total fraud. So basically, as somebody, like I said, who has lived in Los Angeles, I can just tell you, A, it's not true. Everybody jokes about it. I mean, even though you're not supposed to, everybody jokes about it. Lots of Jews in Hollywood. Everybody knows it. And here's what I will say. I used to have such great pride in Hollywood as an export from America, for Steve McQueen, the golden era of cinema, all this stuff. I mean, it was such a point of American pride that Hollywood was the best in the world. And these people are just ruining it. And it's like Jonathan Greenblatt, who's sitting, goes on MSNBC and says, I'm mad at all this anti-Semitism. I'm going to protect our people and all this stuff. It's like, listen, man, you are actually now officially, once again, part of the problem. You have just said, essentially, how about we get more of this DEI nonsense, this racist DEI, and let's just include the Jews. And then it's even more upsetting because we had the Ackmans of the world basically saying, hey, my eyes are open to the fact that this is all an anti-white movement, anti-Christian movement. And then you've got this other group like the Jonathan Greenblatts that are taking us backwards. So it's this fork in the cultural road right now. And your point earlier, Blake, it's like what we want to see is an end to all this stuff. Not this is just such an endorsement of it, and it's really extremely disappointing because not only Hollywood's losing, but we're losing our momentum as to what could have happened after October 7th.
But mind you, instead of saying we should get rid of DEI, they accept the premise of DEI, exactly. And they want preferential treatment. And they're perfectly cool with being
JEDI.
They're perfectly fine with being the anti-white stuff. They're cool with it. They're enthusiastic, but they don't want to be looped in with white people. They would rather have active discrimination as long as they get treatment. I think this is morally repugnant.
Of course it is. What's really funny is, especially like with this letter where they're saying the claim Jewish people aren't white. That could be really funny if they succeeded and you started having this measure in statistics, you know, like the whole, you know, the press loves to come out, you know, like, you know, white people versus non-white people in XYZ stat. And, you know, what if they actually started to do that, you know, whether in Hollywood or academia? Like, what if you actually ran the numbers at Harvard and they had to, and they counted Jewish students as non-white, and then they were releasing stats on like what the percentage of students is at Harvard, who would actually come out as the most underrepresented group? And it might very well actually just be normal white people at
Harvard. But the question is, and they can't answer it, what is a white person then?
Yeah, exactly.
What is a white person? Someone from Europe? Well, most Jews are from Europe.
Yeah.
They're most, I mean, like going back 1,000 years, there's a lot of huge Jewish communities that have been in Europe. So what exactly is a white person? Can they answer that? They've never been. You're not even allowed to say white on certain cable television shows.
And increasingly, people aren't saying it. It's a weird fact. Like one of the things that happened on the 2020 census is there's a huge explosion in the percentage of Hispanics who list their race as other, because Hispanic's not a race on the census. It's all made up. It's an ethnicity. You know, the same. You know, you're the same ethnicity whether you're from Spain or Cuba or Argentina or Mexico, you know, whatever, or the Dominican Republic, and. Well, there was this huge surge in it because it used to be common that Hispanics would say they are white, but also Hispanic ethnically. And now there is this flight from white, as you might want to call it, because the word's out that people don't like white people. They discriminate against them and things. If you're not white, you can get better school admissions, better job opportunities. You know, there's all these scholarships available to you. So everyone's running away from it. And now you can see even in Hollywood, they're like, get away, get away.
It's just the final point, Jack, is that these Jewish groups are saying that it feels so bad to be discriminated against. Please keep discriminating, but not against us. Jack.
You know, I have a question for Blake, because I think there is a bigger point here, which kind of goes to what Charlie was saying, is that you are starting, and you and I discussed this before on the Chronicles of Revolution on the 60s, where you do now have this burgeoning group of, like, white Americans defining themselves as white because they're starting to understand group identity in this racial sense because it's been forced on them by all of this DEI nonsense that now suddenly before, like, you might get people who say, like, okay, we're Poles, okay, we're Irish, okay, we're Italian, et cetera, these other things, but you don't really have people, you know, which is still more of a European construct, but in the American construct, because of the way the demographics are going, and of course, the way the ruling class is going, the ruling ideology in this country is going, you do see this sort of burgeoning white group identity in the United States.
Yeah, it's actually genuinely sick what the left has done, because if you took any group pretty much on planet Earth, and, like, I don't think any group on planet Earth was more genuinely, authentically post-racial than, like, ordinary middle-class white Americans in late 20th century and early 21st century America. That, I mean, first of all, like Jack said, you know, they've largely kind of left behind their old, like, ethnic character. Like, white Americans don't really think of themselves as German or Italian or Irish, except sort of in a very superficial, like, oh, my grandmother was from XYZ sort of way. And other than that, they had very little racial consciousness, and they were very enthusiastic about a post-racial world, treat everyone equally, and they would be happy with that. And instead, what the left has done is come in and said, no, everything is going to be super aggressively racialized. We will talk about race all the time. Race is super important. White privilege this, white everything that, and, you know, race. And they're forcing everyone to be obsessed with this. And some people will go along with this ideological project. And that's where you get, you know, these self-abasing white people who, like, are constantly apologizing for themselves. But That's never going to be all people. And especially as they get more sinister and nasty about it, you're going to get, well, one, you get people who just pretend that they're not white anymore and, you know, they claim a new race. And then you also just get people who say, okay, if you're going to insist I'm white, well, I'm not going to go along with the idea that I'm bad for that. And then you're going to get white racial politics. And congratulations, you now took, you know, a relatively post-racial America and you made it a hyper-racialized
America. They've always
America.
Wanted that, though. I mean,
exactly.
That's the thing.
That's exactly right.
Jack, go ahead.
Well, I just agree.
Yeah, so I have a thought on this. I think this ADL piece specifically, where you have Jonathan Greenblatt choosing to essentially endorse DEI, go with the flow, and, you know, pick the ruling regime, shows where the power is at currently, right? Because I said earlier, there was an MSNBC clip that we don't have, but he essentially got emotional on MSNBC saying, I'm going to fight for our kids and I'm going to fight for our people. And what's underlying that is a sense of sectarianism that I think, you know, we're talking about on the show right now, that it's actually the ruling ideology. He's picking which way the wind is blowing. He's looking at the way the argument's going. He's saying, listen, there's some voices that are saying NDEI. You got Elon Musk and Bill Ackman. Other than that, the ruling elites that he hobnobs with, that give him his source of power, and the ADL their source of power, they're completely bought into this crap. So he's literally like sticking his finger up in the air, feeling which way it's going, and saying, hey, I can't beat him. I need to join him. And so that just shows how much work there is still to be done on the DEI front. I mean, I was last week, I think I was on the show saying how hopeful I was about it. But this is a massive, massive setback, and like enough to make you cynical, because how can you not see strategically, if you're Jewish right now, why would you not look at the 50% plus of the population that's white, Christian, Protestant, whatever, Catholic, and say, hey, I want to be their friends, and I want to include them in a post-racial, post-sectarian America? But he's not. He's choosing the other way because he sees the strategic advantage in it, and that's pretty disheartening. So we've got a lot of work to do.
The ADL is effectively saying nothing wrong with hating certain races. Nothing wrong with preferential treatment without certain races. What's wrong is that we're on the wrong side of the equation. So just please continue your hatred of a certain race. Continue your apartheid regime. Continue it. But we want to be on the protected side. We want to be on the enforcement side, not on the recipient of DEI. And that's what ADL is saying. ADL is saying that hating races is okay. ADL is saying that stereotyping is okay. They're saying prejudice is okay. Instead, they should say, get rid of all preferential treatment. Get rid of all DEI. Treat people as colorblind. Treat it as a meritocracy. But ADL and their donors and their staff and Jonathan Greenblatt, they want Jews to get special treatment the way blacks currently get special treatment in America.
I mean, you know, if Mossad still had their like sort of assassination program, like in that Steven Spielberg movie Munich, which was nominated for an Oscar,
it's
believe.
A good movie.
Oscars. It's a good movie. Probably wouldn't have got those nominations if Hollywood was anti-Semitic, but I don't think they are. But anyway, you know, if they still had that program, I feel like, you know, let's say Mossad has this big picture, like we need to stop global anti-Semitism, you know, because it's a threat to Israel's existence and all that. I think they would have to take out Jonathan Greenblatt. They're just like, this guy is a threat to the state of Israel because he's making people hate us. He's got to go. And that would be a pretty good use of their time. But
he's the worst, man.
He's pretty bad.
Jonathan Greenblatt and the ADL create anti-Semitism.
100%.
It fills me with rage reading that tweet, honestly. As I was reading it, I was trying to keep a straight face, but it fills me with rage. I mean, you saw me in the chat today. I got so pissed seeing that thing. Because it's just like you have this opportunity to make a whole bunch of people your friends and to get into the fight together with millions and millions of just kind, decent, good Americans, post-racial Americans, and instead you do this stuff and you pander to the apartheid state and to the DEI racism. And there's this opening to just choose another route. There's this who knows how many opportunities there are going to be post October 7th. This is the moment to spring into action. Get rid of all this crap, and we can't even do it. It just bothers me.
Jack, I have a question. So I have a question. Yeah. You want to talk about groups that are overrepresented? When's the last time you saw anything out of Hollywood that didn't have a gay character in it?
Never.
Anything.
Mandatory.
I
2013,
don't watch
2014.
Modern Hollywood, so I am pure and untainted.
Or that you were aware of. Charlie, I know you know what I'm talking about. It's literally 100% of content. Even historical pieces, even period pieces, when you go back, suddenly they'll make a character gay or they'll throw something.
In fairness, if it's about representation, it seems like young modern America is charitably 90-95% gay. So you'd have to have a lot of gay characters in their movies.
I was watching Gilded Age because I've heard good things, and it's a period piece, and I got like 4 episodes in, and then there was a gay guy there. Gay,
right there.
Aristocrat.
That's where you went wrong, Andrew. You guys are watching new shows. New shows are created to propagandize you. There's been 100 years of good shows. Just go watch Brideshead Revisited or something. Watch Brideshead Revisited, the old BBC show. There's like a million good BBC series from before Britain went downhill, and you could watch years of that. You could watch years of good movies, and instead everyone's got to have something new. And so they watch new HBO shows, and then they're like, wow, this HBO show was really lib. What did you expect? It's made by HBO in the 2020s.
Actually, there's a great...
Okay.
I was going to throw out, there's a great Russian show out right now. It's called The Boy's Word. It's fantastic. Everybody should go watch it. Theboysword.com. You go see it. It's all about street gangs in the 1980s. No, there was no one who's gay in it, but it's just awesome. Tanya and I watched it. It was so good.
Can we watch it if we don't speak whatever strange language you're fluent in?
They have subtitles.
Oh, okay, fine. All right. Okay. So we're going back. We said we'd talk about this with the Yemen story. This came out on military.com, one of the military news sites. And we'll just get right to it. I'll read it aloud here. You guys can put it on screen, too, if you want. So the headline is, Army sees sharp decline in white recruits. The Army's recruiting of white soldiers has dropped significantly in the last half decade, 5 years, according to internal data reviewed by military.com. The decline accounts for much of the service's historic recruitment slump that has become the subject of increasing concern for Army leadership and Capitol Hill. The shift in demographics for incoming recruits would be irrelevant to war planners, except it coincides with an overall shortfall of 10,000 recruits for the Army in 2023. They continue further down here. Let's see. The rate at which white recruitment has fallen far outpaces nationwide demographic shifts, data experts interviewed noted. They don't see a single cause for the recruiting problem, but pointed to a confluence of issues for Army recruiting, including partisan scrutiny of the service, a growing obesity epidemic, and an underfunded public education system.
Garbage.
That's what they came up with. They came up with obesity epidemic, which impacts non-white Americans more than white ones, and public education system, which impacts
Lloyd
non-white
Austin
Americans.
So, head of the Department of Defense, obesity is not exactly and doesn't disallow you from being in the military.
It's so much.
Got the fattest generals I've ever seen in my life.
Well, Blake, So I just wanted to add a little something. I've been, of course, blocked already on Twitter by the author of this, the article there. Steve Bannon, because I found a tweet that he
Steve
deleted.
Steve Bannon? Really? Steve
Bannon. Yeah, Steve Bannon.
Bannon.
Not your favorite podcaster.
You
no,
can't
Steve
make this
Bannon.
Up.
And I said, and I pull, of course, I screenshotted it. And of course I did a, hey, hi, Steve, why did you delete this? Because the tweet he wrote and then deleted when it started going viral, he said, the data are complicated, but this correlates with males participating less in society, such as the labor force and white males dropping from college. Most importantly, this lines up almost perfectly with conservative pundits and lawmakers using the military as a partisan cudgel. It's like he's basically saying, he's like, this is exactly what conservative pundits have. The data found that the conservative pundits, like everybody here on Thought Crime and all of our respective shows, were exactly correct. Everything that we were saying about the data about male participation in the labor force, particularly white male in the labor force, in college, and in the military, 100% correct. But he's like he deletes the tweet because he suddenly realized, wait, I can't actually let Poso and Jack Posobiec and Charlie Kirk and these guys and Steve Bannon actually prove that they were exactly right.
But it's hilarious, Jack. What he's actually saying is that it's because we started talking about this issue because we noticed there was issues It's actually our fault for talking about it, right? It's our fault for noticing that there was an anti-white
That's
bias,
right. That's
that
right.
The promotion structure was all screwed up, that they were doing their DEI crap and their CRT crap and their white rage crap. All of this stuff is hilarious because it's the old conservatives pounce argument, right?
Yeah.
So we're somehow to blame because you guys started putting race above merit, because you guys started promoting wokies instead of people that were actually gung-ho for
America.
Well,
it's even sicker than that. It's even sick. There's an expectation that whites are going to go fight the wars for you.
Yeah.
There's this expectation that it's our job.
Plays a huge role in this.
And they are, like, it's been pointed out, you know, in Iraq, in all of our conflicts, it's still like white people who die disproportionately in the military. They were always the gung-ho ones.
Yeah,
they were the gung-ho ones who would actually be like, yeah, you know, my father fought in World War II, my grandfather fought in World War I, my great-grandfather fought in Civil War, possibly for the Confederacy. And, you know, we have this long
the
tradition
Lieutenant
of
Dan.
Not just serving.
The Lieutenant dancing.
Yeah. Not
you know
just
where? Yeah.
Not just serving, but, you know, but fighting specifically. And what the military is getting instead, like, the people who want to sign up are the ones who are like, yeah, you know, if you do these things, you can be, you know, a rear echelon logistics guy, and then you can claim, you know, 75% disability due to your hearing loss and, you know, get a pension. And there's a lot of people those who join the military, and, you know, good for them, I guess. But a military does need kind of these gung-ho people who want to fight. And there is no group of people in America who are more alienated by the modern regime we have erected than the kind of people who would do that. You know, that Scotch-Irish born fighting type of person. You know, they like to fight. And now, you know, the country craps on these people all the time. Their way of life is totally blown to pieces. Their home life is a mess. So you have, you know, I kind of think the answer is partly true, that it is a reflection of this disintegration among, like, lower class white people, that there's a lot of drugs, there's a lot of obesity, there's a lot of, you know, there's some crime and stuff. That's all real. And the ones who get through all of that, nevertheless, are alienated from the institutions of our society. So why would they sign up? I know some people whose children are entering the military these days, and it's far more common today that, you know, they'll say, yeah, this is not because they're not doing it for gung-ho patriotism. They just see, I can learn useful skills and I can get ahead professionally. This is how you learn the stuff you need to do if you need to eventually, you know, start your own alternative society even. And that's
get paid
a much
for it.
Yeah, and get paid. And it's a much more common justification than I just, you know, love America and want to serve America.
So, as the you know, I guess resident, I guess vet on the show or whatever, not that I like try to wear that on my sleeve or pull like the Graham Allen stuff. Love Graham, no, you know, no issues with Graham or buddies, but it's just, you know, people do come to me a lot when, especially if I'm speaking at colleges, and they'll talk to me or at a Turning Point event, and they'll come and say, hey, I'm thinking about joining the military, I want to join Intel, I want to go the route you did, what should I do? And I always tell people, I 100%, you know, tell them, make sure you go into a role that does not involve combat, make sure you get what you're getting out of it, you put in what you're going to get out, because they're going to get their pound of flesh out of you. So you go right ahead and you make sure that you sign up for every class, you get all the college, you use your GI Bill that you can get out of it, and, you know, go in for like cybersecurity, go in for language or something like that. I know somebody just got in for language. But when it comes to actually like fighting or going into a combat role, like, you're going to go off, they will send you, this military, to send you off to die in some godforsaken desert, to get blown up or some godforsaken desert. And I got friends that are there right now. And, you know, I'll just say in harm's way and tonight. And, you know, when you really look at the thing, it's just for what? You know, the Houthis are not targeting U.S. civilians here at home. They're not targeting your families. They're not targeting our children. They're not targeting your wives. And so, you know, we go around the world looking for monsters to fight, we look for places to invade, and it's just not worth it. It's totally not worth it. But if you look at this as Blake is saying, as a jobs program, 100%.
I think people are missing. I mean, if you think of your average white Anglo-Saxon Protestant male, the whole culture, the whole everything's rigged against them. Why would they want to go into a combat zone where they very well might be scapegoated and And you hear this from people that served in the Vietnam War all the time. There was a lot of anti-white racism, and there was also anti-black racism. And there were times where white recruits and or black recruits did not always feel safe being in a platoon when there was somebody that didn't like their skin color and vice versa. Why would a white person want to go into the military right now with generals that don't like them putting into almost be like a human shield? We just disengage, not to mention the vaccine issue, where the last kind of gasp of individuality, I guess you could say, of people that say, you know, actually, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go take the vaccine. I'm not. It turns out that white America, what's left of it, is the last that actually has the testosterone, the spine to say, yeah, I'm not going to serve in that military. Now, they're trying to say, oh, whites don't care about the country. That's obviously not true. The military's become a joke. It's become a mockery. It doesn't mean what it used to mean, anything close to it. It's really sad.
To tie it back to a conversation we've had before, it's not just that it's becoming a joke, though it is. You know, we had that discussion, like, oh, what if a civil war in America actually happened? And there is this sort of persistent conservative belief, like, that, oh, well, you know, the military is still on our side. Like, you know, there's this vast conservative military apparatus. And we are seeing that kind of disappear before us.
Yes.
That, you know, a lot of conservatives, they're not signing up for the military. They're quitting over the vaccine.
Yes.
They're not getting promoted. And the military's promotions are very politicized. And you're seeing sort of the death of the military as a traditionally conservative institution happen before us. And we're going to get something very strange. And it's definitely not a given that a military will be a conservative institution just because it's, you know, rah-rah or military or whatever.
It's there have not been, even that rah-rah anymore.
There have been countries where the military, the organized military, is a radical left-wing entity. In revolutionary France, the army was perceived as, like, the most revolutionary organ. And it was like, this would be what would stop anyone from, you know, taking it over. And that was the fear Napoleon had to worry about. In China, the Red Army was kind of this vanguard left-wing entity, and it sort of shifted right during the Cultural Revolution, and so then they had to intervene to, you know, stop that. There's all sorts of things like that. And so we could see that with our military. We could see it is possible to imagine, or actually a good example, this is much more kind of similar to us, in Turkey. In Turkey, it was always that the army was the stronghold of Kemalism, of Kemal Ataturk, the sort of guy who founded modern, more liberal Turkey. And they were like, they tried to overthrow the government, you might remember, about a decade ago, because they thought it was kind of getting too conservative, too Islamist. And this failed. And Turkey's only gone more that direction since. So what if we have that kind of military in America, the military where the Joint Chiefs, you know, maybe Trump is president and he's doing something to secure the border. And there's, you know, maybe there's like a constitutional crisis, they'll call it. And you'd have a military that would step in and say, we're going to step up for American democracy and, you know, just impose some liberal solution because they're a liberal organization now.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Charlie, I was going to say our experience with the Minot Air Force Base, remember?
Yep.
I mean, so they put out that was the commanders at that Air Force Base that put out a text message to everybody saying, hey, don't associate with Turning Point Action, this far right group or whatever. It was like a Lincoln Day dinner, the equivalent of it. And what's interesting about that, I was actually the guy who called the whistleblower that we got in touch with, who's inside that Air Force Base. So I was speaking with him and he gave me the full blow by blow. He basically was like, listen, you only get promoted if you're of a certain skin color, or if you happen to be white, you better toe the line. You better do all the dogmatic principles, the DEI, the CRT. And he also mentioned to me that none of that was in place when Trump was in the military. The day they swore in Joe Biden, on a dime, he said the very next day he was having to do DEI stuff, CRT stuff in training. It turned on a dime. And so now everybody who is conservative, white, Christian, male, whatever, he said everybody's just quiet because they know that if they speak up, it's not going to go well for them. They're going to get stalled in their career. So a lot of people are just opting out. A lot of people are either not getting in the first place, or as soon as they're able, they get out of the military. My brother is also in the army. He told me the same thing. He said a lot of the old dogs are just getting purged. They're self-purging. They're just like, I don't want to put up with this anymore. I'm out. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing the politics anymore. I don't believe in any of it. I'm just going to retire. Right. So instead of actually prolonging your career, a lot of these guys are just getting out. So what we're seeing over a four-year period is the utter transformation of the U.S. military. And one final note, guess what news channel the commanders at Minot Air Force Base have their TVs tuned to?
CNN.
MSNBC.
Yep, yeah. Yep, that's the predictive programming.
Well, here's the thing, too, Andrew, is that it's something at the junior level as well that I don't know if people are realizing, because a lot of these guys, when they go in, especially academy, you know, ring knockers, not only academy ring knockers, no, any issue with those guys generally, and I have a bunch of friends who are, that they're strivers, right? They're ambitious. They go in because they want to make rank, and they want to make rank quickly. And they will say and go along with whatever it is they're supposed to say and go along with that will get them rank faster. So if being woke means you can make rank, then they're going to be the wokest possible wokey they can find. They're going to kick out the extremists, and they're going to do anything they can to earn brownie points from the higher up. So this, if you're set, you're talking about some of the most competitive people in the entire country. And so we should want the competitive, ambitious people to be in our military. The problem is you've completely, you've created basically a moral hazard where you've incentivized them through wokeness more woke and be this Gestapo of wokeness within our own military, kicking out anyone who's conservative. And so this will always happen. Meanwhile, you could easily, as you say, get in a new administration and find people that are not on the side, fire, like, I don't know, everyone over 06 or something,
yeah,
you know,
Charlie,
all the flag officers, and then set up a new system.
Charlie, I have a question for you. So if in 2025 Donald Trump gets sworn into office again, on your show, on the Charlie Kirk Show, would you change your recommendation to young guys that might be thinking about military service? Would you then start recommending they do it, or no?
Depends on what he does. I mean, if he puts Mad Dog Mattis back in there, no way. The guy was a disaster.
Well, he's turned on him, but yeah.
I mean, so he'd have to make serious changes. He'd have to have mass resignations at the Pentagon. We'd need huge realignment. And that, I mean, you want to talk about the deep state? The military is the deep state. I mean, they are unchanging, unwavering. And how ideologically they're committed, we'll see. I mean, I don't know who a new good Department of Defense secretary would be, but it would be one of the top mandates for Trump. By the way, not to mention, let's just focus on one part of it, West Point. West Point is teaching CRT and DEI. That alone would be, you have to basically focus on it for 2 weeks straight with the full force of the executive branch of government. And you'd have to fire 5,000 to 7,000 people, right, Blake? Almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, oh, it's national security. You're putting the country at risk. And just you have to shrug your shoulders and get it done.
Or you do it slow so nobody really, like, notices, you know?
Yeah.
That's another strategy.
We don't have time, I don't think. So what's our next topic, Blake?
Do we want to talk about the letter we got today?
Yes, that would be great. And I want to announce Blake's new role. So I've been teasing this. Again, we do all sorts of crazy stuff on our show. Jack, you're going to love this. And I've been teasing this.
I'm so hype.
So apparently Monday's a federal holiday. I don't know.
Allegedly.
Why.
I'd never heard of this before.
I don't know
there's
why.
There's like some holiday in mid-January.
What holiday? Like, the holiday of Monday.
Like, it seems weird to have it. We just had two holidays. Kind of three if you count.
So ridiculous.
You know, the holidays just ended. We were saying happy holidays and then it ended. So there's no more holidays.
Yeah.
So last year I promised myself when this came around, we were going to go after it. And so here we are. And I'm just going to tease it. You got to watch the show on Monday. And I just said one, it was kind of a throwaway line, right, Andrew?
It was such a throwaway line.
It was a throwaway thing. I'm just kind of doing this thing. And some tech blog called Wired Magazine.
You'd think they would write about computers, the internet,
Bitcoin, crypto, hacking,
engineering,
cybersecurity.
Apparently they just police what people think about a certain infamous American of the mid-20th century.
Yeah, some holy figure. So I'm going to read this email from...
Must be a religion blog.
Who is this guy? I don't know.
Secular saint.
He says, hi, I'm a reporter with Wired Magazine in New York. I'm reaching out because we're publishing a story about Charlie Kirk's comments on Martin Luther King Jr. and his plan to release content about King on January 15th. Mind you, they act like I'm planning a terrorist attack. Like, the way this is written, his plans to create content on January 15th. Like, what am I, like, planning, like, a terrorist attack on Christmas Day? We note in our piece, so you already wrote the piece. That's what I love about this, right? They're not asking me for comment. They're trying to fill in a couple gaps. We note in our piece, We note in our piece that Kirk describes King as, quote, a bad guy. It's true. And Kirk self-described very, very radical. view that the country made a mistake when it passed the Civil Rights Act. Also true. As we note in the piece, Kirk has previously described Kirk as a hero and a civil rights icon. It's true. I used to be wrong. What inspired Kirk to shift his view on MLK? Why does Kirk think that MLK is a bad guy? When Kirk says that MLK says, quote, one good thing he didn't believe, what does he mean by that? Why does Kirk believe passing the Civil Rights Act was a mistake? Now, again, apparently they don't listen to the show because we do that at least once a week,
yeah,
right?
Once
a week we talk about why the Civil Rights Act was a mistake. Does Kirk believe that racial segregation should be permitted in the United States? Again, this is how shallow they are. It's as if you don't support the Leviathan and the building of a mass racialized bureaucracy and a refounding of the United States via the Civil Rights Act, you must be pro-racial segregation. Now, I'd love to find this guy and ask him, like, hey, when's the Wired magazine article going to be done on black-only dormitories? When's the Wired magazine article going to be on anti-white hiring practices at Johns Hopkins? Never. Does TPUSA see any tension that it sells merchandise of MLK on its website? By the way, we don't anymore, so this guy's outdated. What role does Blake Neff have in creating content on MLK?
Because I said, what have I done this time?
No, this is what the best part, right? Because I mentioned Blake. And he says, what role? Well, this is the perfect time to release it. This is a perfect time to announce. Little did this reporter know that Blake Neff is director of MLK History at the Charlie Kirk Show.
Yeah. It's my new title. Right there.
Congratulations.
Right there.
Blake.
Director of MLK Truth.
MLK,
the white MLK better.
He's also known as the white MLK.
Blake Neff, geopolitical analysts have referred to Blake Neff as MLK for white people.
Now, I want you to understand how delicious this is. This is a throwaway line. I was passively planning this. Now I'm going all in.
Yeah.
This guy then finishes.
This would have been like 5 minutes to end the show.
No, the whole hour. Yeah. We're doing the whole hour. I'm prepping this all weekend. We are, because the fact that they go all this out, it's as if I am going after a holy figure. And I say this without kidding. If I did a mockery for a full hour of Jesus Christ, you wouldn't get this sort of incoming. But if you dare, by the way, this is my favorite part, the last inquiry of this lunatic's email. What sort of content about MLK is Kirk planning to publish on January 15th? You're going to have to watch the show, man. I mean, but this guy sounds like nervous.
Yeah.
As if it's like some sort of pending bomb I'm going to plant in a plaza. On January 15th, what is he planning? Is it an insurrection? Are they going to storm the Capitol? No, I'm going to do an hour about how MLK is not worthy of deification and worship. That if you pray in the name of MLK, it does not heal you of the sin of racism.
You know, it's not just a religious thing. It's also, they're worried about treason because, you know, what if
I'm going to have my apartment raided because
We're told America is a republic or a democracy or a democratic republic or a republican democracy, whatever. But we're really a monarchy because if there's one person that like Republicans and Democrats agree is just our supreme authority, it's Martin Luther King.
No, it's
and what's his last name? His last
King.
Name is King. And what does everyone call him? MLK. What if I told you that the Semitic root MLK means King?
Does it really?
In Hebrew.
Is that right?
That is true. 100% true.
Well, then, I mean, he is our king. But if you think about it, again, I don't want to tease out. You have to watch Monday. It's going to be huge. Jack's going to promote it. It is like the ultimate thought crime. We're going all in. This guy writes for Wired Magazine. It'd be one thing if he wrote for Huffington Post or the AP.
Yeah,
Wired Magazine. Like, you don't have a Bitcoin story that, or like, you can't have some sort of tech blog or something. Wired Magazine.
Yeah, like,
and
this guy used to write about
Bitcoin news this year too, this week.
Huge, right? I mean, come on, man. It's just write about a video game or Apple lawsuits or Roblox or something. I mean,
like 50,000 right now or something. It's about to hit 50 again.
What?
Yeah, like, this guy used to write, I think the guy who was doing, I think it was William Turton, at least he's written stuff attacking us before. I don't know what the name is, but.
Great.
If so, like, this guy would have written about cybersecurity, and now his job is to scold everyone for not liking MLK enough.
I asked him when I called him, I said, what's your beat? And he goes, like, without missing a beat, he goes, politics. I said, politics at Wired? He goes, politics.
Everything is,
What does MLK have to do with politics? I guess everything is the answer.
Well, it's an interesting version of, it's like every lib organization, the Sierra Club is now about gay rights. You know, the NAACP is also about gay rights. And, you know, every organization's about racism now. Like, you know, the sort of lib singularity. And it's also like that with every normal publication is now just a politics publication. So Wired was a tech thing, and maybe they'd write about Congress if something really important came up about copyright law or internet regulation. But now it's just, yeah, you have a politics writer, and you probably have that at every organization, at every publication.
Charlie, I love how this just like, this morning was one of the more funny reactions when you got it. You're like, oh, this is delicious. You're like, hey, Turning Point. Do we have MLK gear? Oh, we do. Get it off. And then, MLK tweets? No more.
Full court press. And by the way, it's because this guy that has got nothing. But by the way, you got plane doors falling off of Boeing 737 Max. You got cyber attacks. You know, you got the most interesting tech space, right, Jack? It's not as if there's no tech stories out there for Wired magazine to cover. You got tunnels in underneath Chabad. You got all sorts of crazy things going on. And the fact that I have some sort of throwaway line, like I'm planning an EMP, that like the Charlie Kirk show is, in some ways, we kind of are. Because if you think about it, and I did some research, of any organization that might be considered mainstream or anyone, MLK truly is a bipartisan worshipped figure. And they worship, and you, for all fairness, the right will take one line from MLK and say he's great because of this, and the left will take all the other stuff that he believed, which is the hyper-racialization of America. And again, I don't want to bury the lead, but how did we get here, and how much of our race-obsessed politics is because of the elevating of MLK? And so what was originally planned as a little sideshow is going to be the main show on Monday. Jack.
Well, Charlie.
No, that's right. No, I was going to say that Blake and I just did an entire special on the 60s a couple of weeks ago, which was extremely, extremely highly rated. Viewership was through the roof, hit top 10 on Apple Podcasts for politics. And I wouldn't say the entire thing is about MLK, but there, you know, we definitely took some shots or some reviews, and we went over the history of MLK pretty extensively. And basically came up with this, you know, the formulation that the right needs to stop mythologizing this guy and really needs to stop taking this one line in one speech about, you know, having a dream and children. And obviously it sounds great, but you have to actually look at his record and the things that he did and the things that he supported and the people that he supported, the policies that he supported, the mass race riots that were going on all throughout the 1960s that he didn't seem to bat a single eye at that were going on. And then the fact that we end up with these massively racialized campuses and a massively racialized society after his career. And it's as simple as that when this is kind of like that. There's that guy on Twitter, Kafefe Anon, who says the woke are more correct than the mainstream. And he's right in so many respects, because if you go and talk to the wokes or go to talk to anyone on the progressive left, they'll say that the 60s were sort of a new founding of America. And they're right, because it was in the 1960s that we decided to rewrite all of U.S. law and all of U.S. jurisprudence, essentially to create this inverted hierarchy of race victimization.
And they'll do this with MLK, too. You can find articles pretty routinely where they'll react to conservatives lionizing MLK, and they'll say conservatives put forward this false version of MLK as believing in, you know, a race-blind society. And they'll say, no, actually, he believed in affirmative action and heavy racial preferences. And you are distorting the record of MLK. And then now conservatives are wising up and saying, oh, wait a minute, MLK believed in affirmative action and race preferences and all this discrimination. And everyone, now they're like, they're writing articles about it. Oh my gosh, they're writing things agreeing with what we lectured them they were supposed to believe 10 minutes ago.
That's right.
And it's going to be a fun Monday. But
it's going to be we're doing a deep dive, and Wired magazine, they just might combust. And it's the kind of to put this in summary, it's almost like, how dare you? That's basically the email that he sent. Like, how dare you? It was as if I'm going after a religious figure.
It's as if he became a, you know, perpetually 14-year-old looking Swedish child.
Yes, it was the Greta Thunberg Wired magazine.
How dare you?
How dare you? Go after thou we deify.
Well, you know, Charlie, maybe he realizes that this is the thread. If you pull it, the entire sweater unravels, and he knows it maybe even better than we did. And now we're sort of like, oh, good. Let's press that button. And here's what else is interesting about it. is we were talking about this the other day with the expanding Overton window. Now that you can say whatever you want on Twitter or X, it's like you used to get in trouble for saying replacement theory. Now you put out a tweet about replacement theory and the replacement reality, whatever. Nobody bats an eye. It's not even written up. You don't even get a Media Matters mention out of it. It's nothing. Well, it's you know where the central pieties of an age are by the altars you're not allowed to desecrate. Well, the central piety here is MLK. And man, he gave us a lot of dirt. There's a lot of dirt there when you really
start.
There's
a lot. And it's not just his behavior, which is reprehensible. It's not just his radicalism or any of that. It's also, I want to make sure people understand his worldview. And that's what we're going to do Monday. His worldview is not what you think it is. And I'm not saying he's the worst person ever, but think about it. What human being do we think about, quote, reference, idolize the most from the 20th century? It's not even close in America. He's the only person of the 20th century with his own federal holiday.
He's one of only two people in America who has a federal holiday, period.
And so
in Washington.
I was thinking about this today.
Columbus.
And we even cover up Washington. Oh, you're right. Okay, third. I forgot about Columbus.
Juneteenth.
Forgot about Columbus. My bad.
But I just
connected.
Columbus, the first American.
No, but I was just thinking about this and I said, why is it that the person that gets their own federal holiday is the person we've never actually criticized? Is this the guy that was the father of all nations, Abraham? Is this the guy that wrestled with God, Jacob?
JFK doesn't even have a holiday.
No, it's so bizarre. And the reason, obviously, is that people are afraid of being called a racist, but we're now in this new era, a brave new world brought to you by Elon Musk. And this Martin Luther King, I'm not going to spoil all of it. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be well researched. Everything we're going to say is true. We're going to be fair. We're going to talk about one or two things that MLK got right. You're going to have to tune in Monday. Okay, last topic, Blake. That's a good tease for Monday, everybody.
Last segment, we just have to hit it. Aaron Rodgers versus Jimmy Kimmel. It's pretty funny. So Aaron Rodgers is, of course, an NFL quarterback.
I'm a huge Aaron Rodgers
allegedly, fan. Allegedly, he's a quarterback. I haven't seen him on a field recently.
Too soon, Blake.
He only pretended he was going to come back this season for about, 4 months.
He ran out with the flag, okay?
Yeah, he ran out with the flag. And then I guess he just kind of suggested that Jimmy Kimmel might be a pedophile, which, is an allegation that's thrown around all the time. So he suggested Jimmy Kimmel was on Jeffrey Epstein's list. On Pat McAfee's show.
Which is a totally wild show if you ever watch it.
Pat McAfee, that's an amazing story. A guy goes from a punter to a celebrity.
By the way, I give him 18 months till he's canceled on ESPN. That show is too wild.
I give him six.
You
give
agree?
Him six.
There's no way Disney puts up with it.
He was all over this week saying there's a lot of people at ESPN that don't like me, that hate on my show, that want us to fail.
Oh, yeah.
And then they kicked Rodgers off the show.
He
kicked him off, which that was already by far.
By the way, I think Pat McAfee has a drinking problem. The guy is always blazed half the time.
He was by far the most – Rodgers was the number one guest they had on the show. He got paid $1 million a year for going on it.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Which,
wow. He'd come on every week.
Yeah, he'd come on every week. So it makes sense he'd have a contract. But by far that got the most attention. I follow the NFL, enough to know that Rodgers' segment was always the viral one.
It was hilarious.
And so he's getting rid of him. But all the attention has been on Rodgers so far. Will he apologize for all this? I think the bigger and funnier thing, and maybe it's almost just not news because this is a development that's been the case for a while, but Jimmy Kimmel is so pathetic now. This is the guy who used to be, the man show. It was he did this transgressive comedy, and then he's just the classic
Adam
case.
Cola.
Yeah, he's this classic case of this guy who, got his bag, got his show, and now is pulling the ladder up. And now he's just all, we have to avoid these deeply hurtful, offensive things. Here's what Rodgers should do. Rodgers should go on, find Jimmy Kimmel somewhere, and he should throw a football right at Jimmy Kimmel's crotch so that when Jimmy Kimmel doesn't flinch and doesn't respond, it will confirm to the whole world that Jimmy Kimmel has no balls anymore.
Clips.
Yeah, let's play some of the clips. Ryan did a good job putting this together. Let's go to cut 130.
A lot of people, and I'm quoting myself here, a lot of people, including Jimmy Kimmel, are really hoping that doesn't come out. End quote. That's what I said. That's the entire quote. Okay? I was referring to the fact that if there is a list, which, again, this hasn't come out yet. This was just a deposition, right? And there are names on it. Then that would be the second time that a soft brain, junior college student, you know, wacko, anti-vax, anti-Semite, purveyor, spreader of misinformation, conspiracy theorist, MAGA, whatever other things have been said by him and other people in the media would be right twice. Okay? I'm not stupid enough, even though you think I'm an idiot and you made a lot of comments about my intelligence, I'm not stupid enough to accuse you of that with absolutely zero evidence, concrete evidence. That's ridiculous.
Man, I like Aaron Rodgers more by the day.
You know, he's...
Base.
I think Aaron's he was great. Actually wrong.
It was like Jimmy Kimmel's chef used to cook for Epstein, right? Or something. Wasn't that the connection?
I don't know. I'm just like, saying I like Aaron. I just like his attitude. Chef. I just love that.
Wait, say that, Jack. Jack, what was that?
I believe it's that Jimmy Kimmel is very close friends with the guy who was Epstein's personal chef.
All right. So that's kind of where he was getting. Yeah, that's where Aaron Rodgers was kind of digging in. Now, we haven't seen Kimmel's name actually mentioned on any of the documents that have been dumped, correct? So will Rodgers be proven correct? I don't know. But Kimmel denies it flatly, right? We do have another one. So we do have Kimmel.
Aaron Rodgers was on Today, though.
Yeah, I think that was what we played, where that was his like non-apology. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true. No. He came back on Today, even though they said he wasn't coming back on, because there's a clip of him talking about Saban's retirement. So by definition, that means he was on McAfee's show Today.
I don't have that.
That means McAfee might have just said, "Screw you, ESPN. I'm going to have Rodgers on again."
I don't have that in front of me.
And then McAfee. Yeah, and then McAfee set out Today. Yeah. No, that's right. He came back Today.
Yep.
That's crazy.
After the host, Pat McAfee said New York Jets quarterback wouldn't appear for the rest of the seasons.
Kenny from South Park or whatever. We should just ban Aaron Rodgers from the McAfee show every single week and then just bring him back.
Oh, my God. Happened. You killed Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, my God. They banned him. Oh, my God.
Look at this. ESPN, which airs the Pat McAfee show, declined to comment on Rodgers' latest appearance.
No, I'm telling you, McAfee, he's going to be on the ropes. This guy is wild.
I think he's got one of those great contracts. Even if they fired him, he'd be paid $20 million anyway.
McAfee is built for the internet. The guy could survive outside of it. I'm not a huge McAfee guy. I find him to be a little bit nauseating, but he's very entertaining in like little bite size. I think he can be very good for more than 10 minutes. Like, try watching him comment on a football game. On the Rose Bowl, I accidentally went to ESPN2 where it was a McAfee frat hour, and he was commenting on the Rose Bowl. I lasted about 90 seconds, and I went back to the regular broadcast.
All right. I have detail. After many took McAfee's remarks to mean that Rodgers was banned from the show, the host wrote on X, formerly Twitter, to clarify that the show's segments Aaron Rodgers Tuesdays has always ended when Rodgers' season ended, but that the quarterback will make, quote, random surprise welcomed pop-ins during big events or off-season adventures. He never said that Rodgers will never be on the show again.
Someone's backpedaling.
Ooh,
it's good stuff.
I like this.
All right, we got to wrap up, everybody. Final thoughts around the horn?
Going into those tunnels, man. I'm doing
a friend sent me this joke about it. Heroes in a half shtetl.
It's a Ninja Turtles.
You guys know what a shtetl is. Come on.
I don't.
Twist.
It's the like village the village the Jews live in, like in Fiddler on the Roof. Oh man.
Oh, Charlie's
read a
my
book,
my
guys.
Jew.
Come on, you guys are killing me.
Translator.
Like a kibbutz.
No, not like a
kibbutz is very different than.
You know,
than
what's
what
funny
saying.
Is they accuse us of anti-Semitism. You guys don't even know anything about.
This is why it's so silly when they. I am a what do they call me? A Semite file.
Philo-Semite
is what Mort
Candace,
Klein.
Candace was on Tucker. She said you were an extremist. you were like extreme pro-Israel or something.
I love the Bible. Okay. Yeah. Everybody, till next week, commit thought crimes. But I'll tell you, they're actually going to be this Monday. We picked quite a day. It's the Iowa caucus live stream. It's our holy devout, may he always be remembered, eternally worshipped Martin Luther King Day. And we're going to be going after that whole program. And so it's just, I think we might actually do the Thought Crime Show Monday. We'll see. Whatever it is, Monday's a game. Monday's a day. Got the Iowa caucus, and we got the holy day. It's going to be great. Until then, keep on committing thought crimes. God bless, and do not pray in the name of Martin Luther King Jr.
Thought crime is death.